Én Stirkata vagyok, ez pedig a Bitcoin Kebab, a Bitcoin Bázis podcastja. Hello André, how are you doing?
I'm good, Kata. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So basically I invited you today to talk about the first edition of Bitcoin Atlantis, a Bitcoin only conference in Madeira. And you are the founder of Free Madeira Initiative, which is the organizer of the event. But first, please, before we start to talk about the conference, let us get to know you a little bit better. So how did you get involved with Bitcoin first?
Well,
in the ancient times.
Yes. So it wasn't that long ago. I'm just a regular Bitcoiner that had to go through the shitcoining process, you know, to, as I call it, the tuition times. I paid my dues. But my name is André Loja. I'm an entrepreneur from Madeira. I own several businesses here. Father of four, family guy. And, as curious about crypto in, 2000, I don't even remember, 15, 16, I don't know, started shitcoining. There was the bull run in 2017, the ICOs, all the bullshit, sorry for my English. I fell for all of that, the smart computer, the ICOs, and all those things that I basically only touched Bitcoin because it was a trading pair for all the other shitcoins that I thought were the future of mankind, whatever, I was so wrong. And but I guess it's part of the process, part of the evolution. And And then there was the bear market after 2018, which was already good. So you learn a lot at the time. And then COVID came, right? And COVID was really, really eye-opening because, I own several businesses in Madeira. My main business is related to tourism. So everything stopped. It was a big shock. Suddenly you're locked in your house with four kids. A lot of employees on the other side that you have to pay for the salaries, and everything was confusing at the time. It was crazy days. And after those first few weeks of shock, you have to turn to something, and I turned to Bitcoin again. I started researching more and more. Mm-hmm. And that was quick. I suddenly realized that it was a true light bulb moment, I guess, when you realize that Bitcoin is just not that magic internet money to make a fortune quick, and you realize it's way more than that, and you start that's the moment you start going down the rabbit hole, and it never stops. I'm still there, and I'm never going out again. And your view of the world changes, and you realize there's a fight going on, and you have now this amazing technology that can help humanity have a brighter future, basically. And that surpasses everything. It surpasses, it changes your whole perspective on the world. And you start fighting now for a better world instead of just richness or quick richness. You start fighting for your kids, for your future, for your land, for the community. And I started, it infects your mind.
Yes.
And I started to integrate Bitcoin in everything that I touched, basically. Mm-hmm. It started with the most obvious, like I started accepting Bitcoin for the company. I started DCAing and putting, all my savings in Bitcoin. I started creating wallets for my kids and everything saved for them and in Bitcoin. So, all of that. And then you the more you're there, the more you want to do more. And that's when I had the idea, because I was frustrated by not having any good literature on Bitcoin, mm-hmm. on Portuguese bookstores. Mm-hmm. There was only altcoins, shitcoin books and stuff like that. But I saw but I saw there was demand and there was curiosity about the subject. Uh-huh. And I decided to go for it and to do a Bitcoin-only publishing company and mm-hmm. to translate the best books that I could find on Bitcoin to Portuguese. And mm-hmm. and so I did. I started Monstera Books. And it all started with the DM. That's the crazy story. It all started with the DM on Twitter because I was just a pleb in Madeira. I didn't know anyone. But I sent, you know, as we, there's a Portuguese saying that goes, you know, just throw clay at the wall and see if it sticks. And so I did. I sent a DM to Jeff Booth, which was my favorite book at the time, you know, The Price of Tomorrow. And amazingly, Jeff Booth replied. We started talking. We made a deal. And I was able to start a new company from scratch. So wow. I started Monstera Books with the Price of Tomorrow. And then having Jeff Booth on board was way easier to get other authors. So we translated also Vijay's book, The Bullish Case for Bitcoin. We translated Gigi's book, 21 Lessons. Thank God for Bitcoin from several authors like Jimmy Song and Breedlove. We have Knuts to launch soon. We have the Sovereign Individual to launch soon. But that's but that's how I started getting involved with the community as well, and getting to know these people that were very important for what happened next. And that's the whole story in itself. How Free Madeira came to be, and how everything was possible for this alone pleb in Madeira to do, basically.
But how was the community back then in Madeira? There was a community.
There was nothing.
And how it is now?
There was nothing at the time. I thought I was the only pleb in Madeira. Yeah, of course there's more. You know, when you start getting public, and slowly people start realizing that there's this guy in Madeira who is a Bitcoiner as well. Other Bitcoiners start popping up. So we realized that there were more Bitcoiners in Madeira that we didn't know. So we were just spread out, probably on Bitcoin Twitter, but we didn't even know we were in Madeira. And but most of all, it was that connection to Jeff Booth and the other guys, Daniel Prince and Knut, that were very important, because when the moment, when occasion arose that we were, you know, able to proceed with other ventures, their connections were very, very important. And it all started with bringing the president of Madeira to Bitcoin Miami in 2022.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. This was the time when you founded Free Madeira initiative.
No,
right?
Free Madeira was after that. So first of all, there was this possibility to, I knew the president privately, and one of my businesses
of Madeira,
of the government of Madeira, and one of my businesses is a co-working space. So I have Cowork Funchal in downtown Funchal, and after COVID there were a lot of nomads and expats that came to Madeira to work. So it was turning to into this big thing, you know. Madeira is now a nomad destination and whatnot. And the president was visiting the co-working space to check out what was happening, you know, to understand the process. There was also another project by Startup Madeira, which is an official government entity with the aim of attracting, you know, freelancers and nomads and whatnot. So he was just checking the thing. And in the conversation, suddenly he was talking about his objectives for Madeira overall. Because after COVID, especially, again, light bulb moment, it was a very hard time for everyone, including the government, because Madeira is very reliant on tourism.
It's
the backbone of the economy. And it all stopped. So I think they truly realized that Madeira cannot depend only on, you know, on tourism. So they started betting a lot on, you know, making Madeira more attractive for tech entrepreneurs, for companies, for, you know, we have a very good digital infrastructure. Quality of life in Madeira is amazing. It's amazing. Like, it's a beautiful island. Weather is magnificent. We have, you know, roads all over, Wi-Fi, 5Gs, you know, all of that. There's plenty of data cables coming to Madeira for Europe, for South America, for all of that. So in terms of digital infrastructure, Madeira is very good. And quality of life is amazing as well. So in this new world where people can, you know, basically work from everywhere, the president saw, and in my view, very correctly, that Madeira could finally fight for a bigger position in terms of attracting startups, entrepreneurs, freelancers, and whatnot. So in the conversation, I basically seized the moment. I said, wait, maybe I can help if you're willing to accept, you know, that Bitcoin is this new amazing open source technology. At the time, he, you know, he was mentioning crypto, you know, all the nomads use crypto and it's the future, and the young men's, you know, the young men and women, they all use it. And I basically saw the two, that I had two options. It was a good moment to try to differentiate on his eyes Bitcoin from everything else.
Yes.
And and also, you know, try to get a foot in the door and make him understand that it would be really good to attract Bitcoiners to the island, because again, in my view, it's the only thing that matters. So and eventually, this was a long process, of course, but eventually turned out that, you know, I had this crazy idea to bring him to Miami. I reached out to Daniel Prince and Jeff Booth. And,
So this is the timeline. Yeah, now I got it.
And finally, the president agreed. So we went to Miami. It was the most surreal week of my life. I was just seeing all my, you know, my the guys that I looked up to, my idols. But I was with the president by my side, and everything turned out to be really quick, you know. And then we were received by Michael Saylor in his villa. He did a whole talk.
It's so surreal, president. No?
Everything. We went to Safestin dinner. We were received by Preston Pish, by Jeff Booth, by a lot of different people. Greg Foss, you know, they all met the president. Samson was very important at the time as well. He invited the president to a dinner, and they eventually agreed to even take the president on stage, on the main stage, and the president did a short, you know, interview or announcement that Madeira would be embracing Bitcoin. He actually used the wrong assessment at the time. He said adopting Bitcoin, and that created a lot of confusion because they thought Madeira was, you know,
yeah, it would be like a legal tender,
which is not possible at all. Wasn't even possible. He meant, of course, adopting Bitcoin as you know, welcoming tech entrepreneurs you know, all of that. It wasn't really he was not fully orange pilled. He just knew the direction the things were going. So he used the wrong expression. But in hindsight, it was really good, because it kickstarted a whole movement, a whole curiosity about Madeira and what would the president do in Madeira. And we eventually negotiated. I already had this idea in my head. So if to proceed, the best strategy would be to create a non-government entity, and that turned out to be quite the good decision for what I'm telling you later. Not related to government at all. We're just going to do a non-profit for the education and adoption of Bitcoin. Bitcoin touches everything. We have a lot of plans for Madeira, of course, on the education, but also on the remittances. We have big diaspora immigration all over the all over the world, especially in Venezuela and South Africa. There's the Bitcoin business hub that we want to do, so to attract Bitcoin companies and Bitcoin entrepreneurs. Yeah. VC investment eventually for those companies. We want to work with the, you know, energy related projects with the public power company and also private investors, biomass projects, you know, renewable, integrating mining on renewable projects. So there's a lot of, it's a long-term project basically.
Yes, of course.
And eventually I'd also pitched, this is the great part. So all these great guys also turned out to, you know, get deeply involved in the project. We have a big advisory board. Jeff Booth, Greg Foss, Larry Leppert, Troy Cross, Knut, Daniel Prince, Obi, Max Illebrand, Gigi, many others. And this turned out to be the best thing that could happen to us, because they have a huge network, you know, a lot of followers. Yes. They were supporting the project since start. Their advice and network was invaluable to all of this. And we started having you know, regular weekly meetings to decide what we would do and how to proceed and all of that. And on one of those meetings, I pitched the idea to do a conference here in Madeira. In my view, it was supposed to be a small thing. I just wanted the advisory board to come over, you know, keep the conversation going on with the government entities, with private people, with the education partners, you know, all of that. But suddenly, because it's a big network and Jeff Booth was really important at the time, he started inviting other Bitcoiners. And suddenly, we had people like Jack Dorsey and Michael Saylor confirmed. And at one point, I'm not the guy to do something, you know, if you do it properly.
Of course.
So I basically said to my, one day I was looking at the mirror and I said, man, this is happening. These people are coming. Let's take the opportunity to do something really, really good, or the best we can, okay?
Of course.
And let's take this opportunity to put Madeira in the map of world conferences. Let's go for it. So
let's get the stadium.
The stadium is quite a nice story as well. But so basically, I said, okay, like if we're doing this and we are so fortunate that these people agreed to come, let's go for it. And then I decided to do the best conference that I could. And now we have 170 speakers confirmed.
Wow.
It's a full stadium, three stages, a book corner, the kids area, a lot of good people working with us, like BTC Sessions, Benark, Fractal Encrypt, Martel Fox with the VC pitch. There's a lot of satellite events outside of the main venue. We really went forward on leisure stuff as well. Mm-hmm. You know, bring the families, spend a vacation here.
Yes.
There's a music festival, there's a film festival, there's a lot of parties, there's a golf tournament, there's hikes, there's runnings, there's so many things, a boat trip, so many cool stuff to do. I think the biggest satellite event is the Atlas Music Festival. Theo Katzman is coming on a very cool park.
So it's
going to be great. And yeah, so we went for it, and we decided to make it good, and we've been working on it since a lot of months now, fast approaching, and we hope everything goes smooth, because we did really went overboard, but I think it's gonna go great, and people will have a great time in Madeira.
No, really, I remember. Maybe it was last year, October, when I first saw the advertisement of the conference, and I immediately checked the website and I saw a couple of speakers, you know, and a couple of events and everything. But by now, and actually when I started to follow you on Instagram and all social media, I can see that literally every single day there is something new popping up, either a new speaker or a new satellite event or a new announcement or whatever. So I'm really looking forward.
In the last, 3 weeks or so, we've been publicly announcing, I think, five speakers a day, because there was not even enough time to put one a day, because we wouldn't be able to introduce them all.
List them.
So I just said, I basically at one point just said to this, I saw the plan of the social media and I said, no. Girls, because there are two girls. And I said, look, you need to increase this a lot, because then we won't have time to announce everyone. And I don't want to announce people on the day before. That doesn't make sense. So we need to start putting everything out there and announce the book corner and the art gallery and the BTC Sessions workshop and the Looking Glass, my first Bitcoin room, and the Benark room, and, you know, and the kids area and all the satellite events. So we started really pushing stuff out.
Yes.
And now the only thing, I think the big thing still missing, is the final schedule of all the programming. Uh-huh. We only announced the blocks and the teams of the main stage and who the curators are and the main speakers. Mm-hmm. But we're going to publish soon, hopefully next week, all the final schedule, because it was a big, big process. We have 170 speakers. We had to create panels and talks and, you know, fit everyone on the schedule. and it's full 3 days, three stages, a lot of people. You won't be able to see everything for sure. So that's going to be a problem. You're going to need to curate your own decisions inside the venue.
To choose. Oh, gosh, I'm already afraid.
But we're going to stream both stages as well.
Uh-huh.
And then after the conference, we're going to release all the clips, all the panels, all the keynotes. Yeah. So even if you miss something, it will be available afterwards.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be amazing.
You know what? I'm curious to know, how was the welcome of local people? I tell you why. I joined when I got to know that I will travel there. I joined a couple of expats group on Facebook. And the situation reminds me of Malta like 5 years back, because I can see that many people, Europeans, Americans, third country folks, are interested in moving to Madeira. And you can really feel the tension. I mean, locals blame these people a bit for stealing jobs, and landlords getting greedy, and rental prices go up, and there are not so many properties as far as I can see. And obviously everybody wants to settle in Funchal, the capital of the island. I know that these Facebook groups are can be delusional. What is the truth?
Well, first of all, nobody has the whole truth and the whole, you know, vision of a problem. Yeah, my view on it is that, again, it's a very fiat problem, right? Because although it's true that Madeira is very high on demand, especially after COVID, it increased a lot the interest on Madeira because of COVID, mostly. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sensation of people trying to escape the big cities and you know, trying to get a more quality of life destination, more open air,
back to the nature
a little
bit. No, yes,
so Madeira gained a lot with that. There was also the nomad project, so a lot of nomads were coming to Madeira. It suddenly started to be this huge freelancer nomad expat destination. So and Madeira, and another problem, Madeira is really good, you know. I'm
too good.
I'm biased, of course. I have four kids. I think it's a perfect place to raise a family. We have a good mixture of still a medium-sized city with culture, restaurants, and things to do, and very good schools and nature and activities for the kids, and also more rural area all around the Madeira. So the weather is good, and it's a good overall quality of life. So when we started having a lot of people visiting, way more than usual, because it was already a very touristic destination, but more people that were looking at Madeira with different eyes as a place maybe to settle, to raise a family, to come and live. So yeah, it started, people loved it. Once they come, they do love it. And yeah, they started buying properties, they started investing, they started creating families there. Suddenly you have schools in Funchal that have 30% kids who are foreigners.
Wow, and it's a lot.
Madeira is a small island, right? And you can't increase the real estate properties from one day to the other, and it started to be expensive. And there are also the fiat games behind with the inflation and everything that we know, you know, right?
Yes.
And people blame the wrong horses a lot of time. They started, instead of blaming all the nonsense that we know in houses as investment, because people cannot leave money at the banks and all the conversation that we know, they started blaming the wrong horse, in my opinion. They started blaming the foreigners that actually, in my view, but I'm a libertarian, right? In my view, are bringing a lot of value to Madeira, a totally different perspective, companies, young kids, entrepreneurship, in a way that we never saw in Madeira happen before. So this was really, really good for Madeira, in my view. Of course, nothing is perfect. There's always trade-offs. These people were, of course, needing of a place to stay and live. So they were renting, they were buying. That left less houses in the market. with the problem of the fiat on top of that, so suddenly things started to get really, really expensive for the locals. And then it creates tensions, of course, and it's, you know, left-wing parties start attacking, you know, they are to blame. And
the same and story everywhere, no?
Our project didn't help as well, because a lot of Bitcoiners came.
That's why I'm asking, yes.
But what can I do? I'm going to build a skyscraper in the mountains? Like, I can't... So, yeah, it's in my view, it's the wrong blaming game, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. But the truth is, I also feel the problems of the locals, because average salaries in Portugal are not that big. And suddenly people coming from, you know, with more capacity, financial capacity, were, you know, skewing the rental market and the buying market even higher because they could afford it. And they leave the locals out of in a hard situation. And if you add on top of that the last year where interest rates came, you know, through the roof, it's almost impossible to get a loan that you can afford to buy a house. So it's hard, and we have to manage everything the best we can.
Balance, yes. The system is cracking, that's for sure.
Yeah, the system is cracking. Now, my way to balance was just to eliminate government, but that's a long way to go. I don't think that's going
to
be possible.
We are here to help.
I don't think it's going to be possible soon. And honestly, if you say this to the regular guy, they think you're crazy in this.
Yes, I know.
You know what it is.
No, another approach is needed.
Government is here to protect us, and we have the right to have a house, and as if it's a fundamental right that houses just fall from the sky, and EU is here to protect us, and you know, all the same narrative.
Oh, the whole perspective has to be changed, I guess.
I don't think it's very hard. It's not going to change so soon. I think a lot of Bitcoiners want things to change faster. They won't, in my view. It's going to take a long, long time.
It's a process.
And we're here for the long term. It's like the Frima Data. You know, everybody tells me, oh, how is it going? And I say, well, we're doing things. But this is a long term.
Yeah, slowly but surely, no?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I saw the map that you have quite a lot of merchants, for example, accepting Bitcoin.
Yeah, and the reception has been amazing. You know, in the beginning, I was not very interested in merchant adoption when we started Frima Data, because the community was not that large yet. And I was just, you know, why would I put the cart in front of the oxes, you know, like, and then, you know, onboard merchants and there would be no regular payments. So, this, you know,
it
will come in time. You know, I was just, you know, let it go. If the community grows, this will happen organically. But because of the conference, we started pushing it a little bit more because, you know, we're going to have a lot of Bitcoiners in Funchal. We're going to be overrun by Bitcoiners for a week. And I thought, oh, maybe this we need to start pushing this a little bit more. And we got Charlie on board, which actually has a great story of its own. Charlie is a Venezuelan that escaped Venezuela with Bitcoin in his head with his mother.
Wow.
It's an amazing story. As he puts it himself, I was forced to learn Bitcoin way before you privileged Westerners in Europe.
Yeah, I'm laughing, but this is the set.
It's very, very true, very true. And actually an equalizing process in itself, because the global salt was way in front of us, and that's good in a way.
Yes.
So he came to Madeira. It was the first official hire of Free Madeira, and Charlie started going all over, you know, talking to merchants, and the reception has been amazing. We almost have no refusals. Everybody's curious. Yeah. Now we started our graph. Seems like the bull run of it. even big companies like the golf course, we just onboarded 2 days ago the biggest brewery of Madeira, you know, a company with 150 years old that owns, it's amazing. We have pharmacies, we have dental practices, we have restaurants, we have many, many places now all over Funchal, especially in Funchal now because it was the focus.
Yeah.
But it's going to spread out to Madeira, to all of Madeira soon.
But it shows to me how open-minded people must be there, if it's so easy to do it.
And in a way, you see that people are already curious about crypto. What you see is that they don't know how to differentiate Bitcoin from the rest. That's a big education
learning
problem
curve,
that will
of
have a
course.
big learning curve. But people are already curious. Portuguese people and Portuguese businessmen are already very pressured with taxes and regulations and red tape. So if they see another way, well, it's just another, you know, POS machine in my company. If it brings company, if it brings clients, you know, I can, some of them exchange the euros because of accounting.
But it doesn't hurt. I mean,
it doesn't hurt because it's a foot in the door. And then they start learning, Bitcoin starts getting there. It gets curious. You'll want to learn more. So again, it's a long-term process. Let's not judge because the guy doesn't want to hold Bitcoin, you know, like, let's just help them understand slowly and let them have their time to figure out the whole thing. And hopefully when he's ready, he'll understand why Bitcoin is so important.
And you already had this movement in Portugal, not on Madeira particularly, but a couple of years back, like in 2021,
but it was,
there was already, no?
Because
there was
different.
No taxation
exactly.
on crypto.
That was
and,
different.
Yes.
That was, I have my own opinion about that. You know, Portugal was regarded as this crypto paradise for a few years.
It was a bad approach, I guess, no?
Very bad approach, in my view. Because I actually cringed when I, you know, people, Portugal is amazing. Portugal is tax-free. You know, Portugal was tax-free because of incompetence. The government didn't do anything.
They didn't know.
They didn't know. They didn't do anything for years. So there was no regulations. So it was basically tax-free because there were no laws yet.
Exactly.
And in my view, it was terrible. Although in Lisbon, people were like, the future companies are all coming to Lisbon, you know, blockchain this, Web3 that. And, you know, you know, I went to Lisbon and I got sick. You know, there was this Solana party and Chainlink, whatever. And everybody was throwing money everywhere. A lot of young guys just having parties and drinks, and it was a mess, you know. You know, 99% of them were marketeers, not developers.
Yes.
It was just crazy. But of course, the government didn't know the difference. They just thought, we are attracting all these startups on the blockchain space. And
But it's over by now, isn't it?
It's not over. They're still there.
I mean, prices went up. I was following.
Yeah, it's not as good as it was.
But
Lisbon is still regarded as one of the startup hubs of Europe, because there was also other projects in other areas, like we had the Web Summit for 10 years already in Lisbon.
Yes, I remember that too.
And there was this big bet by the mayor of Lisbon to do co-working spaces all over and incubators and this and that. So there was a lot of startups, and I guess crypto just got attached to it, and there was a big movement in Lisbon. Unfortunately, it just creates, in my view, a lot of confusion, you know. Again, people think, I feel sorry because there's a lot of younger people that just fall for that, and they start onboarding Portuguese people for those companies as marketeers and as this and as that. There's a lot of money to burn on those shitcoin companies. So Bitcoin companies cannot compete on that for sure.
That's all for sure.
And the education takes a long time and effort. So, and most people just don't do it. So again, it's going to require a long time to clear all that bullshit.
I agree. Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's for sure. But I also saw this very nice initiative that for local people, the entry ticket for the conference is just like 20 euros or something like this.
It's not 20 euros, but it's way, way cheaper. So that was one of the goals. We had to create a resident ticket because, you know, this is part of the overall goal of education on the local. So I couldn't let go of this opportunity to at least attract the most that I can. And of course, again, Portuguese people are not the most wealthy of all, so I couldn't just charge the same numbers or I wouldn't get any locals in. So we created this resident-only ticket that you have to show proof that you live in Madeira and are a resident in Madeira. And it's 42 euros, but you get a bolt card with 21 euros in Bitcoin to use inside the venue and at the music festival and so on. So basically, it's 21 euros. And then if you divide on the 3 days, it's 7 euros per day. It's nothing.
It's nothing.
So, and it's working. We are selling a lot. Although residents usually, they leave to the last minute to buy. They don't, they're not in a rush. So hopefully we're going to get at least, I'm hoping to get 1,000 residents at least, which is already very good.
Yeah, we will see that. And I also wanted to talk about my impression that the conference is not the usual conference. It's more like, and you also mentioned these satellite events and other stuff, music and art. So this is more like, for me, spreading Bitcoin culture. And for me, it was very important and very, I was very happy about that, that I can also bring my family, my children, so they can attend. They will have this new impression. I consider it as part of their education, to be honest. How is the welcome? You will have a lot of families. You can see something like this already in advance.
We are already seeing a lot of people like you that are saying, oh, yeah, I'm bringing the wife, I'm bringing the kids. And we're very happy about that. Very happy about that. Because as the same way I was putting, one of the big goals was attracting locals. This is a big opportunity for them to come to, you know, to be educated, to understand how Bitcoin can help an island like ours, can help them, can help their community. It was also part of the project to bring Bitcoiners from abroad and getting to know Madeira, maybe realizing that Madeira can be a destination for them, for their families, for, you know, to come more often or even become residents here and help the project. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a physical space that it's, I'm so happy about that. And yeah, so since the beginning, we wanted to create this whole experience for the family as well. Mm-hmm. Not only like the male Bitcoiner in the house that, you know,
exactly the and stereotype. We would
get 99%, you know, males inside the venue. I'm a father of four, and I saw this on other conferences as well. Just a few babies, and they were a bit lost. That the parents, you know, with their headphones on the main stage, with
pull them.
Yeah. So since the beginning, that I really wanted to create a family-friendly event. We're gonna have a women's only event, for example. A lot of registrations already. Cool. Mm. A lot of registrations. We have to move venue. We started on a place that we thought it was only for up to 60 women, and we thought it was gonna be enough. We had to change it now because there's a lot more registrations than we imagined.
And I haven't even registered yet.
So there's a lot more coming, but the new space is way bigger, so it can fit everyone, I think.
And hopefully,
and also at the venue, we also created a more friendly space for the families, you know, to bring the families to the conference, not just leave them out there and bring the women, bring the kids, get them involved. So we created this kids area that a lot of people are helping. It's going to be divided in two spaces, one for up to 6 years old, which is more like just play with nannies and, you know, the usual air castle and games and paintings, you know, and all that stuff. So younger kids can also be there entertained, or the parents can even leave them for a bit and go to watch one of the panels or something like that. And then there's another area for more grown-ups up to 16 years old. That will have a small stage of its own. So they have their own programming. Some of the Bitcoiners are invited for some talks there, but it's more about families and parents. And then there's a lot of games also outside. Frankie, Scott and Mallory from Shamory, they're helping with the programming. Nathan Day is going to bring a lot of games and activities and so on. There's going to be chocolate workshops. Lightning Piggies is going to be here with their workshops as well. And Josiah's Carbon, you know, Coach Carbon is doing a lot of sports activities. There's table tennis tournaments and, you know, and football. And so there's activities and conversations and games. And it's just a cool place for the kids to be. And I think the parents are going to be there as well, honestly. I'm even trying to get I'm negotiating now. This is not a promise yet. It's not set on stone, but there will be even a rally simulator because rally is quite big in Madeira. So there's going to be a rally simulator with the streets of Madeira, the Madeira Rally, and we're going to do a competition, and the best time of the 3 days will win some sets, and so some cool stuff for people to do.
I really can't
And this mixed with everything else, we also betted a lot on good food vendors and drinks. We're going to have a lot of nice food. We invited almost 10 different people that we like from Funchal. There's going to be burgers and pizzas and toasts and juices.
Francesina, how you call it? I've been to Portugal once.
Francesina is from Oporto. I don't think there's going
to
be that.
Because I've been to Porto. Okay.
Francesina, I don't think so. But we're going to have the bol do caco with the...
Okay.
it's going to be great.
Cool.
People are going to live a lot fatter from Madeira, I think.
I don't mind. I just want to be there finally. Listen, my last question, very stupid question, but I have to ask you.
Okay.
Is Cristiano Ronaldo a Bitcoiner?
No, unfortunately, he's still a shitcoiner, as you can see.
Yes, I can see. That's why I'm asking.
He's been shilling Binance and these golden NFTs or whatever.
Yes.
He doesn't know. He's a very busy man.
But you didn't.
He was paid for it, as you know. There's a whole marketing thing around Cristiano.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's a shame. We actually had a project to try to orange pill Cristiano Ronaldo. This was one of our missions. Safedin was involved. He even wrote a letter to Ronaldo that I translated to Portuguese. I put inside the book and I sent him. I don't think it ever reached them. You know, a guy like that has his whole layers of security and the family and everything.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever reached his hands, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, and this is one of my secret hopes, I guess, that we really make a fuss out of this conference and we make it so big. And guys like Jack Dorsey and Michael Saylor are arriving in Madeira with their jets, you know, and this maybe will bring attention to Cristiano somehow. And
hopefully
he will approach us one day instead of the opposite. Maybe. Who knows?
Yes. Hi, Andre. I'm here.
Hey, look, I want to learn a bit more about this Bitcoin thing, you know.
Listen, the hope dies lastly, so you never know.
Andre,
I thank you. I thank you for this conversation. I know you are crazy busy, got to go. So I will see you in Madeira. And thank you so much for the chat.
Thank you.
See you soon.
It's going to be great.